And yet there was peace in his eyes. His lips parted, and he mouthed his final word. Susan. The air rushing into translator ignited on contact. In a brilliant flash of light, Commander Trevor Strathmore passed from man to silhouette to legend. When the blast hit Susan, it blew her back 15 feet into Strathmore's office. All she remembered was a searing heat. Chapter 106. In the window of the director's conference room, high above the crypto dome, three faces appeared, breathless. The explosion had shaken the entire NSA complex. Leland Fontaine, Chad Brinkerhoff, and Midge Milken all stared out in silent horror. 70 feet below, the crypto dome was blazing. The polycarbonate roof was still intact, but beneath the transparent shell, a fire raged. Black smoke swirled like fog inside the dome. The three stared down without a word. The spectacle had an eerie grandeur to it. Fontaine stood a long moment. He finally spoke, his voice faint but unwavering. Midge, get a crew down there. Now. Across the suite, Fontaine's phone began to ring. It was Jabba. Chapter 107. Susan had no idea how much time had passed. A burning in her throat pulled her to her senses. Disoriented, she studied her surroundings. She was on a carpet behind a desk. The only light in the room was a strange orange flickering. The air smelled of burning plastic. The room she was standing in was not really a room at all. It was a devastated shell. The curtains were on fire, and the plexiglass walls were smoldering. Then she remembered it all. David. In a rising panic, she pulled herself to her feet. The air felt caustic in her windpipe. She stumbled to the doorway, looking for a way out. As she crossed the threshold, her legs swung out over an abyss. She grabbed the doorframe just in time. The catwalk had disappeared. 50 feet below was a twisted collapse of steaming metal. Susan scanned the crypto floor in horror. It was a sea of fire. The melted remains of 3 million silicon chips had erupted from translator like lava. Thick, acrid smoke billowed upward. Susan knew the smell. Silicon smoke. Deadly poison. Retreating into the remains of Strathmore's office, she began to feel faint. Her throat burned. The entire place was filled with a fiery light. Crypto was dying. So will I, she thought. For a moment she considered the only possible exit, Strathmore's elevator. But she knew it was useless. The electronics never would have survived the blast. But as Susan made her way through the thickening smoke, she recalled Hale's words. The elevator runs on power from the main building. I've seen the schematics. Susan knew that was true. She also knew the entire shaft was encased in reinforced concrete. The fumes swirled all around her. She stumbled through the smoke toward the elevator door. But when she got there, she saw that the elevator's call button was dark. Susan jabbed fruitlessly at the darkened panel, then fell to her knees and pounded on the door. She stopped almost instantly. Something was whirring behind the doors. Startled, she looked up. It sounded like the carriage was right there. Susan stabbed at the button again. Again, a whirring behind the doors. Suddenly, she saw it. The call button was not dead. It had just been covered with black soot. It now glowed faintly beneath her smudged fingerprints. There's power. With a surge of hope, she punched at the button. Over and over, something behind the doors engaged. She could hear the ventilation fan in the elevator car. The carriage is here. Why won't the damn doors open? Through the smoke, she spied the tiny secondary keypad, lettered buttons A through Z. In a wave of despair, Susan remembered the password. The smoke was starting to curl in through the melted window frames. Again, she banged on the elevator doors. They refused to open. The password, she thought. Strathmore never told me the password. Silicon smoke was now filling the office. Choking, Susan fell against the elevator in defeat. The ventilation fan was running just a few feet away. She lay there, dazed, gulping for air. She closed her eyes, but again David's voice woke her. Escape, Susan. Open the door. Escape. She opened her eyes, expecting to see his face, those wild green eyes, that playful smile. but the letters A to Z came into focus. The password. Susan stared at the letters on the keypad. She could barely keep them in focus. On the LED below the keypad, five empty spots awaited entry. A five-character password, she thought. She instantly knew the odds. 26 to the fifth power. 11,881,376 possible choices. At one guess every second, it would take 19 weeks. As Susan Fletcher lay choking on the floor beneath the keypad, the commander's pathetic voice came to her. He was calling to her again. I love you, Susan. I've always loved you. Susan. 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 She knew he was dead, and yet his voice was relentless. She heard her name over and over. Susan. Susan. Then, in a moment of chilling clarity, she knew. Trembling weakly, she reached up to the keypad and typed the password. S. U. S. A. N. An instant later, the door slid open. Chapter 108. Strathmore's elevator dropped fast. Inside the carriage, Susan sucked deep breaths of fresh air into her lungs. Dazed, she steadied herself against the wall as the car slowed to a stop. A moment later, some gears clicked, and the conveyor began moving again, this time horizontally. Susan felt the carriage accelerate as it began rumbling toward the main NSA complex. Finally, it whirred to a stop, and the doors opened. Coughing, Susan Fletcher stumbled into a darkened cement corridor. She found herself in a tunnel, low-ceilinged and narrow. A double yellow line stretched out before her. The line disappeared into an empty, dark hollow. The underground highway. She staggered toward the tunnel, holding the wall for guidance. Behind her, the elevator door slid shut. Once again, Susan Fletcher was plunged into darkness. Silence. Nothing except a faint humming in the walls. A humming that grew louder. Suddenly, it was as if dawn were breaking. The blackness thinned to a hazy gray. The walls of the tunnel began to take shape. All at once, a small vehicle whipped around the corner, its headlight blinding her. Susan stumbled back against the wall and shielded her eyes. There was a gust of air, and the transport whipped past. An instant later, there was a deafening squeal of rubber on cement. The hum approached once again, this time in reverse. Seconds later, the vehicle came to a stop beside her. "Miss Fletcher!" an astonished voice exclaimed. Susan gazed at a vaguely human shape in the driver's seat of an electric golf cart. "Jesus!" the man gasped. "Are you okay? We thought you were dead." Susan stared blankly. "Chad Brinkerhoff," he sputtered, studying the shell-shocked cryptographer. "Directorial PA." Susan could only manage a dazed whimper. "Translator," Brinkerhoff nodded. "Forget it. Get on." The beam of the golf cart's headlights whipped across the cement walls. "There's a virus in the main databank," Brinkerhoff blurted. "I know," Susan heard herself whisper. "We need you to help us." Susan was fighting back the tears. "Strathmore, he..." "We know," Brinkerhoff said. "He bypassed Gauntlet." "Yes, and..." The words got stuck in her throat. "He killed David." Brinkerhoff put a hand on her shoulder. "Almost there, Miss Fletcher. Just hold on." The high-speed Kensington golf cart rounded a corner and skidded to a stop. Beside them, branching off perpendicular to the tunnel, was a hallway, dimly lit by red floor lighting. "Come on," Brinkerhoff said, helping her out. He guided her into the corridor. Susan drifted behind him in a fog. The tiled passageway sloped downward at a steep incline. Susan grabbed the handrail and followed Brinkerhoff down. The air began to grow cooler. They continued their descent. As they dropped deeper into the earth, the tunnel narrowed. From somewhere behind them came the echo of footsteps, a strong, purposeful gait. The footsteps grew louder. Both Brinkerhoff and Susan stopped and turned. Striding toward them was an enormous black man. Susan had never seen him before. As he approached, he fixed her with a penetrating stare. "Who's this?" he demanded. "Susan Fletcher," Brinkerhoff replied. The enormous man arched his eyebrows. Even sooty and soaked, Susan Fletcher was more striking than he had imagined. "And the commander?" he demanded. Brinkerhoff shook his head. The man said nothing. He stared off a moment. Then he turned back to Susan. "Levin Fontaine," he said, offering her his hand. "Glad you're okay." Susan stared. She'd always known she'd meet the director someday, but this was not the introduction she'd envisioned. "Come along, Miss Fletcher," Fontaine said, leading the way. "We'll need all the help we can get." Looming in the reddish haze at the bottom of the tunnel, a steel wall blocked their way. Fontaine approached and typed an entry code into a recessed cipher box. He then placed his right hand against a small glass panel. A strobe flashed. A moment later, the massive wall thundered left. There was only one NSA chamber more sacred than crypto, and Susan Fletcher sensed she was about to enter it. Chapter 109. The command center for the NSA's main databank looked like a scaled-down NASA mission control. A dozen computer workstations faced the 30-foot by 40-foot video wall at the far end of the room. On the screen, numbers and diagrams flashed in rapid succession, appearing and disappearing as if someone were channel surfing. A handful of technicians raced wildly from station to station, trailing long sheets of printout paper and yelling commands. It was chaos. Susan stared at the dazzling facility. She vaguely remembered that 250 metric tons of earth had been excavated to create it. The chamber was located 214 feet below ground, where it would be totally impervious to flux bombs and nuclear blasts. On a raised workstation in the center of the room stood Jabba. He bellowed orders from his platform like a king to his subjects. Illuminated on the screen directly behind him was a message. The message was all too familiar to Susan. The billboard-sized text hung ominously over Jabba's head. "Only the truth will save you now. Enter passkey." As if trapped in some surreal nightmare, Susan followed Fontaine toward the podium. Her world was a slow-motion blur. Jabba saw them coming and wheeled like an enraged bull. "I built Gauntlet for a reason." "Gauntlet's gone," Fontaine replied evenly. "Old news, director," Jabba spat. "The shockwave knocked me on my ass. Where's Strathmore?"
"Commander Strathmore is dead."
"Poetic fucking justice."
"Call it, Jabba," the director ordered.
"Bring us up to speed. How bad is this virus?"
Jabba stared at the director a long moment, and then without warning he burst out laughing.
"A virus?"
His harsh guffaw resonated through the underground chamber.
"Is that what you think this is?"
Fontaine kept his cool. Jabba's insolence was way out of line, but Fontaine knew this was not the time or place to handle it. Down here, Jabba outranked God himself. Computer problems had a way of ignoring the normal chain of command.
"It's not a virus?" Brinkerhoff exclaimed hopefully.
Jabba snorted in disgust.
"Viruses have replication strings, pretty boy. This doesn't."
Susan hovered nearby, unable to focus.
"Then what's going on?" Fontaine demanded. "I thought we had a virus."
Jabba sucked in a long breath and lowered his voice.
"Viruses," he said, wiping sweat from his face. "Viruses reproduce. They create clones. They're vain and stupid, binary egomaniacs. They pump out babies faster than rabbits. That's their weakness. You can cross-breed them into oblivion, if you know what you're doing. Unfortunately, this program has no ego, no need to reproduce. It's clear-headed and focused. In fact, when it's accomplished its objective here, it will probably commit digital suicide."
Jabba held out his arms reverently to the projected havoc on the enormous screen.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he sighed, "meet the kamikaze of computer invaders. The worm."
"Worm?" Brinkerhoff groaned. It seemed like a mundane term to describe the insidious intruder.
"Worm," Jabba smoldered. "No complex structures, just instinct. Eat, shit, crawl. That's it. Simplicity. Deadly simplicity. It does what it's programmed to do and then checks out."
Fontaine eyed Jabba sternly.
"And what is this worm programmed to do?" "No clue," Jabba replied.
Right now,